The book of Ruth, this morning we come to chapter 2. This past Friday, the state of Michigan released its unemployment figures for our state. And unemployment here in Michigan has now clocked in at 15.2%. That's not only the highest of any state in the union, but that's the highest that it's been for any state in the union since 1984. And it comes as no surprise to any of you, because we live in this economy, we work in this economy, we know people, maybe you are one of them, who is without a job and desperately seeking employment. Not only is the economy of our nation hit hard, but the economy of our state is suffering worse than anywhere else in these 50 states. And so there are a lot of people who once had a livelihood, who once had the ability to provide for their families by working, who not only no longer have work to provide for their families, but they can't find work to make up the slack. Or if they can find work, it's work that is at much fewer hours or at a much lower rate of pay than what they're used to, so that if they're getting by at all, they're just barely getting by and living far below the standard of living that they once had. We're living in a time of unprecedented, in my lifetime at least, economic downturn. Fortunately, in our society, we have the ability to help people who cannot find work for whatever reason. Our government has built in to the way that we operate unemployment, which gives people who have lost their jobs under most circumstances the ability to continue to receive some income during the time in which they are searching for work to try to replace the job that they lost. And although sometimes, like everything in life, unemployment may be abused by people, in many ways, it's an important part of living in our society. It's part of the compassion that our society has built into the way that we are set up. And it is a good and it is a righteous thing that we have. And here in Ruth chapter 2, we have met last week two women who are unemployed. Two people who used to have God's provision on their lives, but now because of the U-turns and reversals that have come into their lives, they find themselves poor and unemployed. Their names, of course, are Naomi and Ruth. And if you weren't here with us last Sunday, and if you're not familiar with the story, let me just briefly summarize it for you. The story began with a man named Elimelech who lived in the town of Bethlehem during a time in which there was a famine in his land. And so he decided to leave his town of Bethlehem, his country of Israel, and travel to a place over 50 miles away called Moab. And while he was in Moab, he died unexpectedly. And while he was there, his two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, took on wives of the Moabite people, but they died as well. Mahlon and Chilion, his two sons, also died. And so this man Elimelech's wife, Naomi, decided to return to her native land of Israel. And she gave her daughters-in-law the permission with her blessing, with the blessing of God, to remain there in Moab. And one of them took that blessing and remained in Moab. But one of her daughters-in-law, Ruth, had seen the operation of the grace of God in Naomi's life. And she turned her back not only on her countrymen and her family and her people, but also on the idols and false gods that she had grown up under. And she turned and embraced the Lord God of Israel and took on and made a commitment to her mother-in-law that she would go with her and live with her, with the implicit obligation to help provide for her. And so these two women made their way back from the country of Moab, back to the land of Israel, to the town of Bethlehem, where Naomi was from before she left. And as our story ended last week at the end of chapter 1, just as they were coming into town, the Bible says it was just the beginning of the barley harvest. And so that's a sign of hope for these two women who have undergone not only economic reversals in their life, but the worst kind of personal reversal, the loss of a spouse, which for them not only meant the loss of the affection and love that their spouse would bring them and companionship, but also the provision that a husband would bring to a woman in that day and age. So we find these two women returning to Israel, and there are signs of hope, but they are still in a very desperate situation. They are both poor, as poor can be, and they are both unemployed with no prospects for employment. Now, how are these two women going to be provided for in that society? Chapter 2 begins to answer that question for us. Let's look together at what it says. Ruth chapter 2, verse 1 says this. Now, Naomi had a relative on her husband's side from the clan of Elimelech, a man of standing whose name was Boaz. This verse is a parenthesis in the story. It is a digression of sorts to preview and pre-introduce for us a man who is going to become a very compelling and important character in the remainder of the story. And it tells us that this man Boaz, whom we are about to meet and get some insight into his life in a moment, is someone who was connected to Naomi through her husband and his family. And the Bible tells us that this man was not only a relative of her husband, but toward the end of the verse it says this, that he was a man of standing. This is a phrase that describes his economic means. It's a phrase that is used to describe a man of wealth, but not only a man of wealth, but a man who was also well-regarded in the community. And although those two things often went together, they did not always go together. Because you see, it is possible through ruthless business practices and through taking advantage of others to become a wealthy person and yet be despised and not respected by the society around you. And so the fact that Boaz is described as a man of standing tells us a couple things about him. Number one, it tells us that he is a man who has reached some economic success in his life. But it also tells us that the means by which he became economic successful has also elevated him in the culture, so that he was someone to whom the people of Bethlehem looked up to as a man of standing in their community. So Boaz is pre-introduced for us. Now the story resumes in verse 2. It says this. And Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, "Let me go into the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor." Naomi said to her, "Go ahead, my daughter." So verse 3 says, "So she went out and began to glean in the fields behind the harvesters." Now again, this returns us to the story, and it reminds us that although Naomi and Ruth have returned, or Naomi has returned and Ruth has come to the land of Israel, the land of Bethlehem, and although Naomi still has some property in this area because of her husband, she does not have any money in the bank, because that was unheard of in their culture. She does not have any economic means to provide for herself. She is now a poor person. She is someone whom society must take care of if she is going to be provided for. And so her daughter-in-law, Ruth, who is younger and able-bodied, realizes and understands the condition into which they have entered into Israel. And somehow, either because the customs of Israel were also the customs of their other land, or because somehow she had learned what the law provided, but somehow or other, Ruth knows that it is legal and acceptable and, in fact, appointed for the very poor people of the land to enter into a field that is being harvested and take some of the leftovers that the harvesters miss. This is called gleaning in the Old Testament. And it is something that the Bible specifically allows for. It allows for it in a number of Old Testament passages, Leviticus 19 and Deuteronomy 24 among them. This was the means by which God legislated for the poorest people of society, the people who, through whatever economic and U-turn reversals in their lives, could not earn a living for themselves, could still have what they needed to continue some kind of subsistence level of existence in Israel. And so Ruth takes it upon herself. Someone who has experienced a major U-turn in her life with the loss of her husband and now turning her back on her own society, she comes into a foreign culture and she goes out into the fields to use the means that God had provided for her to provide for herself and her mother-in-law. And often, as we find Ruth and Naomi in this story, when we face a U-turn in life, especially an economic U-turn that is a setback in our lives, we find ourselves struggling to get by. No matter how much Ruth is able to glean in the fields, her existence as a gleaner is going to be subsistence level at best. She and her mother-in-law are faced with the prospect of a long life, especially for Ruth, ahead of them, just struggling to make ends meet as the very poorest people in their society. And sometimes in our lives, we find ourselves that way as well. We find ourselves just struggling to get by. And part of the way that God provides for people who are struggling to get by is through the generosity of others. Now, you need to understand, as I've already framed it, that God has commanded that those who owned land and those who were farming their crops were to leave some for the poor. And we need to get very clear about how this works. Because you see, in the eighth commandment, thou shalt not steal, the Word of God encodes the sanctity of private property. And it sets down as a fundamental right the issue of private property on which our entire capitalist system depends. And so it was righteous and it was proper for someone who owned land, who farmed the land, to reap the benefits economically of that ownership and that hard work. The Bible affirms both the righteousness of private property and the righteousness of the reward and the increase that comes from hard work in return. But we need to understand this, that in these passages in the Old Testament that allow for gleaners to come in, the Bible also provided and commanded, in fact, those who were wealthy, those who were well provided for, those who did own private property and did reap the benefits from them, not to take every last penny, but instead to leave some generosity for those who had faced economic U-turns in their life. And that is the system on which Naomi and her daughter-in-law Ruth are now depending. They are depending upon the generosity of some landowner in Israel who will allow them onto his private property and will say, I'm going to follow the covenant responsibilities of the law, not to take every last penny out of this business that I own, but to leave some for those who are, in our language, less fortunate than I am. And this is no small thing, because remember, this passage happens in a setting when the judges ruled. And the time of the judges ruled were a time of tremendous unrighteousness in Israel. And as we're going to see, there are allusions in this passage to what could have happened to Ruth if she were to venture into the land of a ruthless landowner. There were people in Israel who were committed to wringing every last bit of economic value out of the land that they owned. Forget about the poor. They were not so interested in serving God as to provide for those who were poor. They wanted to get every bit out of the land that they owned. And so Naomi and Ruth here are dependent upon the generosity of someone who is going to follow the covenant obligations of the law. And in the end of verse 3, that's where we find Ruth. And notice what it says there in that verse again. Verse 3 says, so she went out and began to glean in the fields behind the harvesters. As it turned out, she found herself working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. So this man who was introduced in verse 1, a distant relative of Naomi's husband Elimelech. It was his field that Ruth found herself gleaning in, not by her intention, not by her design, not by her plan, not because she knew about the relationship, because she didn't. She just somehow, by chance, happened to wander into the fields of Boaz. Now, in the next verse, we're going to be introduced to this man, Boaz, in a much more personal and a much more intimate way. And we're going to find some insight into his character as a person. Notice with me what verse 4 says. It says this, just then Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters. The Lord be with you. The Lord bless you, they called back. Now, already in this salutation that is given and received by Boaz, we see something of an insight into this man's character. Because you see, Boaz is not like the other men of Israel who lived during the time of Judges, who was looking to the idols, to Baal and Ashtaroth, to provide for himself. No, he uses the covenant name of God, and he wishes a covenant blessing upon the workers. And this is not merely pious talk, as we're going to find out. This talk is an expression of the character of a man who believed the word of God and tried to order his life accordingly. And just by chance, this is the place where this poor, destitute young woman, Ruth, finds herself gleaning on that day. She just happens to, by chance, find herself in the fields of this righteous man who is following the Lord. Now, notice something else about Boaz in the next verse. It says in verse 5, Boaz asked the foreman of his harvesters, whose young woman is that? The foreman replied, she is the Moabitess who came back from Moab with Naomi. She said, please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvesters. She went into the field and worked steadily from morning till now, except for a short rest in the shelter. Now, this tells us something insightful about Boaz. Because you see, there were other women, as we're going to find out, working in this field. There were servant girls who were also coming behind the harvesters and cleaning up and picking up after them and doing some work in the fields as well. And Boaz was a wealthy enough man that he could have been oblivious to who belonged to his servant girls, but he's not. What does this tell us about him? The fact that he greets his workers upon arrival and instantly notices a newcomer among the women who are working in this field tells us that he is a man of compassion. He knows who his workers are, and he cares about their well-being, and he instantly notices a newcomer to the group and wonders about her. And so the foreman of his workers tells Boaz, in brief, a little bit about the story of Ruth. Again, in verse 6, the foreman replied, she is the Moabitess who came back from Moab with Naomi. She said, please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvester. She went into the field and has worked steadily from morning till now, except for a short rest in the shelter. This description of the work ethic of Ruth is consistent with what we already know about her. We already know her to be a very strong woman, someone who, although she has had this major setback in her life, losing her husband and now becoming a poor person, has some kind of inner resolve in her to stick with her mother-in-law and turn her back on her family, a remarkable thing to do. Now we find, unsurprisingly, that she is a hard worker. The foreman says, she's been at it, man. Since we got started this morning, she has been steadily working, and she's only taken a short rest in the shelter. Boaz responds in the next verse, verse 8. It says this, so Boaz said to Ruth, my daughter, listen to me. And the word my daughter indicates a couple of things to us. One, it indicates that Boaz is aware of his relationship to this young woman, that he is connected to her legally by her father-in-law's family. Ruth does not know this. But another thing that's signaled, and the primary thing about why he said this, my daughter, it indicates the vast age disparity between this man, Boaz, and this woman, Ruth. She was a much younger woman than he was. Let's go on. Verse 8. Boaz said to Ruth, "My daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field and don't go away from here. Stay with my servant girls." There it is. There are other women already working in the field. "Watch the field where the men are harvesting and follow along after the girls. I have told the men not to touch you. And whenever you are thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars that the men have filled." This tells us more about what a compassionate person Boaz is. Because not only does he specifically go to Ruth and speak to her instead of just leaving her alone, he goes to her and he gives her explicit instructions. And his instructions are, stay here. Keep coming back to my fields. Don't feel like after working today, you need to go find somebody else's field to glean in and sort of spread out and let the generosity flow to others. You ought to stay here and continue to work in my fields, because if you work in my fields, the implicit promise that Boaz is making is you will be well provided for. You will find enough working in my fields to provide for what you and your mother-in-law need. And he goes on and says this, continuing in that verse. Verse 9, I have told the men not to touch you, and whenever you are thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars the men have filled. Now listen, it's Israel. It's the desert, okay? They have the ability to plant crops and harvest them, but it's hot there. And this is the time of harvest, and people are working hard. It would have been very easy for someone like Ruth to succumb to the problems of heat stroke and other problems. And so he generously opens to her not only the shelter where she could get some relief from the sun, but also the water jars that the men were constantly refilling from the wells. Those were to provide for Boaz's workers. But Boaz, in his generosity, which the law did not require him to do, said, "You also may, any time that you are thirsty, go and drink of the water, and the men will keep filling those jars, so take as much as you need." So this gives us some insight into this man Boaz. It tells us something about his character, that he is a man of compassion, one who is interested in caring for this remarkable young woman that he has just met, this woman named Ruth. And we see that when we face the U-turns and problems in life, sometimes God will send along other people to help us out. In fact, if you read the Bible, doesn't matter which testament you're in, you will find that the primary means by which God provides for his people in need is through the generosity of others. And we need to stop and take a quick lesson here. Because you see, each of us are in different economic circumstances, and we're in a time of great economic upheaval in our country. If you are a person whom God is providing for right now because you have employment and you are getting paid well and you have an abundance beyond what your family needs to survive, you need to understand that as a compassionate person, God wants you to look compassionately upon the needful others around you, just as Boaz did. That is one of the ways in which God has provided in a compassionate society, especially the society known as the church, where those who are suffering can be cared for through the generosity of others. And if you're someone who's struggling economically, if you're someone who is in a place of need, I'm here to tell you, the people of God are here for you. It's very easy, and I think it's partially because of the American way, the rugged individualism that we're all born with. It's very easy to try to suppress and hide the needs that we have in life and say, "I don't want to be a bother to someone else. I'll find my own way." Listen, if you are in a place of need, God has provided you with a church family to help to meet that need in your life. And you should never walk away from the opportunity to allow the body of Christ to care for you when you are in a place of need, because that's what God gave the body for. Whenever we face U-turns in life that are setbacks in terms of our economy, we are dependent upon the generosity of others, and Ruth has found her way into the life of a person who is going to generously provide for her. Now, let's continue in the passage and notice what it says. Beginning in verse 10, Ruth is overwhelmed with gratitude, and it says this: at this she bowed down with her face to the ground. She exclaimed, "Why have I found such favor in your eyes that you notice me, a foreigner?" Boaz replied, "I have been told about all that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you left your father and mother in your homeland and came to live with a people you did not know before." Boaz is a generous man. I think he's generous by nature, and I think we've seen some of that insight in the way that he treats his workers. But he is even more motivated to provide for Ruth, by his own admission, because of the remarkable testimony of her life. Because she was a person who was willing to turn her back on all of that to care for her mother-in-law. She was someone who was willing to live by faith. Boaz is willing to step into the gap and be part of the provision of God in her life. And this is a remarkable thing. And this is a remarkable person, this Ruth. I mean, here is a person who has lost her husband. And the sorrow and the bereavement that comes from that, it can be so overwhelming to a person that it just debilitates a person just in their normal life, not to mention the other setbacks that she faced in life. But not only is she not allowing herself to have a pity party and invite others, she is not only out working in the field, but she expresses gratitude to Boaz. She is not someone saying, "Why did God allow this to happen to me? Why is my life so miserable? Why did I make this mistake to come back to Israel?" No, her response is gratitude for what has happened and saying, "I am not worthy of this. Why are you doing this?" Now, in the next verse, we come to one of the really crucial passages in this book and in this chapter especially. And Boaz completes his thought, he completes his description of why he has shown compassion to Ruth by offering a benediction, by offering a prayer on her behalf. It says this: "May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." Not only does Boaz leave a special provision for Ruth, and he's going to increase that as we go on in this passage, you'll see. Not only is he compassionate and concerned to care for this family that is in great need in their lives, and not only is he impressed with the faith that Ruth has demonstrated in her life, but he calls upon God to add a special blessing to her. He says, "May God richly bless you." What's the point of this? He is saying, "I'm asking God not just to give you the bare subsistence you're going to find in my fields, but I'm asking God to look at your faith and look at what you have done and pour out upon you a multitude of blessings in your life." And so we see that the salutation that Boaz gave to his workers on the way in was not just pious talk, but it was an expression of the deep faith that this man has. And at the very end of this little passage, this little section, this little prayer of Boaz, we find a very interesting image. Notice what it says at the very end of that passage I just read, the end of verse 12. It says this: "May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." What does this tell us? It tells us that the provision that Ruth and Naomi are receiving did not happen to them by accident, but it happened because of their faith in God. Boaz ties his generosity to Ruth to the explicit provision of God upon her life. And he uses an image, an analogy. He says, "May you be blessed by the Lord of God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." Now, this is a beautiful little figure of speech, especially if you divorce your mind from the fact that he's comparing God to a chicken, okay? But that's what he's doing. He is saying, like a chicken who gathers her chicks under her wings, a hen who gives them safety and security during the times of danger, Ruth has come like a chick under the wings of a chicken, under the wings of a hen, under the wings of God. She is coming under the provision and protection of God for everything that she needs in her life. And this reminds us what we learned last Sunday, that when we face the U-turns in life, we have a choice. Our choice is either to run away from God and to blame God and to cause it, to allow the economic reversals and U-turns of our life to bring a rift into our relationship to God, or we can allow the U-turns in our life, even ones that we did not plan for and ones that we are, in a sense, victims of, we can allow those to draw us back to God in a special way. Ruth has chosen to find in God not bitterness like Naomi, her mother-in-law, was tempted to follow. Ruth has found and turned to God for protection and provision, even though it was the will of God that took her husband away from her. And you see, we need to think about this very carefully. Because you see, in the economic and other U-turns of life, when we face reversals and setbacks, we are being tested as to the genuineness of our faith. And the Bible tells us over and over and over and over again that this is what God does. You see, it's easy to be a Christian, and in fact, it's fun and blessed to be a Christian when times are going well, when things are going great, and God is providing for you like you could never have expected, and prosperity is coming into your life, and everything that you want in life seems to be coming true, and you have a satisfying life built around you. It's easy to call yourself a Christian and be active in the church and come into this place and praise God and give thanks. It's easy to do it then. But what happens when God starts to chip away at that Christian American dream, when God starts to remove pieces from that puzzle that you had all together in your life, when God starts to take away some of the things that he gave, what is your response going to be? Are you going to run away from God and say, God is not true and the Bible is false and none of that stuff works? Or are you going to come to God? Yes, in your pain. Yes, feeling a hurt in your heart. But are you going to come to God and find shelter under his wings? That is the test of a true person of faith. And maybe you're being put to the test right now. Maybe you've just gone through some U-turn in your life, maybe any kind of thing. And already in your heart, in your mind, the battle has begun. Are you going to put your faith in God, or are you going to turn and run away from God? Let me tell you that the thing that happened that caused you to be in this place was not an accident. It is something that God does to us as believers to show to us and to the world whether our faith is true or false. Whether we really trust God, no matter what, or whether we look to God like a little, you know, magic rabbit's foot that brings us, you know, blessings in the good times when we rub it, okay? We're working the rabbit's foot. It's bringing us the good stuff. But the minute things go bad, we chuck that and look for another good luck charm in life. What kind of believer in God are you? That's the key question. This passage indicates to us, of course, we know from everything that she has done to this point that Ruth is a genuine believer in God. That somehow through the life of Naomi, and despite the fact that God has taken her husband out of the picture prematurely, she has seen the truthfulness of the one true God in Israel, and she has come, she has fled to him in the U-turns of her life, looking for protection and provision. And Boaz says, I want to be there to be part of that protection and provision in your life, and may God increase that protection and provision in your life. The passage continues then, beginning in verse 13. Ruth speaks and says, May I continue to find favor in your eyes, my Lord. She says, You have given me comfort and have spoken kindly to your servant, though I do not have the standing of one of your servant girls. Tremendous humility that this woman has. Then Boaz continues to provide for her even more than he already has. Verse 14, At mealtime, Boaz said to her, Come over here, have some bread and dip it in the wine vinegar. So he gives her part of his own meal, doesn't make her provide for herself. He graciously shares with her the meal that he has for himself and his harvesters. The verse continues, When she sat down with the harvesters, he offered her some roasted grain, and she ate all she wanted and had some left over. For the first time in many days, Ruth is not only full, but she's got leftovers. The passage continues, verse 15. She got up to glean. Boaz gave orders to his men. Even if she gathers among the sheaves, even if she goes over to the work that you've already done and takes out from the bundles, from the work that you've already done, don't bug her about it. He continues. Don't embarrass her. Rather, pull out stalks for her from the bundles and leave them for her to pick up, and don't rebuke her. Boaz is saying, listen, guys. Not only are we supposed to leave the corners of the fields for these poor people to reap, but I want you to put some stuff out there on purpose so that she will go away from here with more than what she needs. And so verse 17 continues. So Ruth gleaned in the field until evening. Then she threshed the barley that she had gathered, and it amounted to about an ephah, which is about 3/5 to a half of a bushel, or about 30 pounds. This is the threshing actually, and I know nothing about agriculture, okay? So if you do, excuse me. But my understanding is that the threshing is what gives you the edible part of, in this case, the barley. And so what she has done is she has gone through and she has worked what she has gathered to take the edible part home, and she's taking about 30 pounds worth. This is quite a haul, all right, for someone who is a beggar going out in the field working on her own. It continues, verse 18, she carried it back to town, and her mother-in-law saw how much she had gathered. Ruth also brought out and gave her leftovers after she had eaten enough. And so here's a woman who is left on the goodness of society. She is falling back on the provision that God allowed in the law. She goes out into the fields not knowing what is going to happen to her. And living in the time of the judges, anything could have happened to her because people were so unrighteous. And by chance, she finds her way into the fields of a godly man who not only does what God says in the law and allows her to reap from the corners, but says, let's make sure she walks out of here with way more than she needs so that she is adequately and well provided for. And Naomi is blown away. Verse 19. Her mother-in-law asked her, where did you glean today? Where did you work? Blessed be the man who took notice of you. She says, Ruth, I know that you did not just pick this up on the corners of the field. Somebody had compassion on you because you brought home leftovers from lunch. Let's continue this verse. Verse 19. Then Ruth told her mother-in-law about the one at whose place she had been working. The name of the man I worked with today is Boaz. Bing, that's important, okay? Because verse 1 in this passage already told us that Boaz has a prior family connection to Naomi through Naomi's deceased husband, Elimelech. Notice what Naomi says in verse 20. The Lord bless him. Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, he has not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead. And then she adds this, oh, by the way, that man is our close relative. He is one of our kinsmen redeemers. Now, this is something that Naomi tacks on at the end, but you can already tell the wheels are turning in her mind. She sees what God is starting to do here, and she is starting to have some hope that God is doing something here that she could never have asked for and never have anticipated. And she doesn't tell us what it is yet, and we don't really start to find out until the next chapter. But you need to understand by the fact that Ruth has found her way into the field of Boaz, and Boaz has cared for Ruth, Naomi sees that God has begun to work, that there is something happening here that is greater than just the provision of gleaning that she has. Verse 21, then Ruth the Moabitess said, he even said to me, stay with my workers until they finish harvesting all my grain. In other words, she said, he invited me to come back. Verse 22, Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, it will be good for you, my daughter, to go with his girls because in someone else's field you might be harmed. See, Naomi knows we live in the time of judges. People are not following the law. People are living ruthlessly. They might abuse you and toss you out of the fields. It's good for you to stay with this man. Verse 23, so Ruth stayed close to the servant girls of Boaz to glean until the barley and wheat harvesters were finished. So now it's not just the barley harvest, but also the wheat harvest where she gleans. And she lived with her mother-in-law. Here we see, in stark contrast to the end of chapter 1, where there is just a faint glimmer of hope that it's barley harvest, here we see how abundantly God has provided for these two poor women who were completely dependent on him because of all the U-turns and setbacks they had faced in life. And this passage shows us very clearly how God provided for this family because of their faith in him. Now, we need to understand this, and I want to come back to something that I said during the message last week. Last week, I talked a bit about the will of God. And I talked about how the fact that we think of the will of God as being on the same plane as our own willing. And let me go back to the analogy I used then. If both of us came into the parking lot at the same time and we were both eyeing the same parking spot, it is impossible for both of us to park there. And so therefore, one of us is going to have his will thwarted. Okay, and it's going to be me because that's just the kind of guy I am. I'm going to let you have the parking spot and I'll go park somewhere else. But the point is, both of us in this world cannot get the same, cannot both have our will if we will to do the same thing. But the Bible tells us that God can will on a much higher level, a much higher plane than we do. And the Bible tells us this, and it's mysterious to us, it's impossible for us to comprehend, but it is nonetheless true, that God is able to allow people to follow their own nature, their own whims, their own sinfulness, their own thing, or their own righteousness, and in their choosing, they are still doing what God has decreed that they will do, and they are doing it in a way where God has not coerced them. Now, that is willing on a completely different level than you and I will. But what it tells us is this, is that when we feel like victims of the unkindness of others, or when we benefit from the kindness of others, either way, we are experiencing the will of God working in our life. And this passage adds another dynamic to it and tells us this, that when we look at the circumstances in life, the things that seem like complete random chance occurrences are actually engineered by the will of God. Let me go back and show you this in the passage because it's hinted at in a number of spots. Look at verse 1. Before the story continues, the author tells us this. It says, "Now Naomi had a relative on her husband's side from the clan of Elimelech, a man of standing whose name was Boaz." This tells us about the family relationship that's going to become very important in chapter 3. And it reveals to us that although Naomi feels bereft and forsaken by God, and she is bitter against God. And remember all those passages where she says, "The hand of the Almighty has gone out against me," in chapter 1. God has not forgotten about her, and in fact, God has provided for her and left someone in her family there to provide for her in a way that she is not at all cognizant of. Drop down to verse 3. The passage says this, "So she went," this is Ruth, "went out and began to glean in the field behind the harvesters. As it turned out," she found herself working in a field belonging to Boaz. Now the phrase, "as it turns out," makes it sound like this is just a random chance event. That, like, of all the fields that she could have stumbled upon, you know, maybe she flipped a coin or maybe she just walked into the nearest one, but somehow or other, she just happened to, by chance, find herself in the field of this wealthy man who, by the way, loves God and wants to follow him and serve him and cares about the poor and also has a prior family connection to her. You see how what an amazing luck this is? Of course it's not luck. This is the will of God operating in what seems to be the random chance events in life, and theologians have a word for this. We call it the providence of God. The providence of God is when the will of God is working at a level that we are not visible, that is invisible to us, but one that causes in a non-miraculous way for God to do things for us that we could not have done for ourselves. Ruth did not know about Boaz. She didn't know whose field belonged to whom. There was no way in which this was a conscious decision of Ruth to come here and hope for generosity from this man. But somehow, because God's will is higher than ours, God used the choices that Ruth made to bring her to the place where he is going to provide for her and her family. And so what this passage tells us, and what you and I need to take away from this story at this point in our study of it this morning, is that when you come under the wings of God, when you allow the U-turns in life not to repel you from God, but to draw you close to him, when it causes you to look to him for provision, God will provide and direct you when you look to him and trust him in the U-turns of life.